Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back near the end of the season. Well, it is the end of the season, but we're now into the festive season and all goodwill to good men and everything else, and presents and gifts and trees and things like that, and maybe contracts given. Who knows? Nobody knows. That's the point. Everybody's still guessing. We're going to keep guessing today, and we're going to keep talking about it. Of course, we're going to keep talking about it, but there is things afoot. And I can assure you, by the way, there is the conspiracy behind why we've delayed this for a day is nothing more than the fact that genuinely we're just going to do it a day later, no matter what happened, by the way. And in case you were thinking there was going to be something there, I realise now people may switch off at this point. Please don't, because we've got a very different programme this week, because Jack Bennion wrote a note, told us he wasn't going to be here, all a bit last minute. He's playing roundy over at Laguna Seca. So a very, very able standing and a man that probably knows more than all of us put together anyway. Julian Porter, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
No, thank you. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. Of course, we've got Ryan Champion as well. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. It might be the festive season. It's very definitely the silly season.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
And now, Julian Porter, we have debated and we have gone backwards and forwards and we've played Fantasy WRC Manager. We've done everything. Julian Porter, what's your thoughts?
In the perfect world, the dream world for the World Rally Championship, it's OJ to M Sport. That is what I think 99% of rally fans want. It's what obviously M Sport and Malcolm Wilson want. Whether it's what Sebastian OJ wants, we're not sure. I got told last week that he was going to make his mind up by the end of the week, and then it was put on to last night. It was delayed till last night, and then still nothing has come out. I've just actually seen a tweet only about 5 minutes ago of apparently Ford bosses or something are en route to Dovenby Hall in Cumbria to discuss stuff with Malcolm Wilson. Now, what does that mean? I'm not really sure, but it'll be all interesting. Now, I know that Ogier, one of his things that he was saying was he wanted, I think, a bit of backing from Ford themselves rather than just M Sport. I think he wanted a bit of like official backing. Is that what he's waiting for? The Volkswagen privateer plan coming along? I'm unsure about that plan, pure and simply from an OG situation of, yeah, he knows the car's brilliant, he knows it's going to work, he knows the mechanics, he knows the engineers, he knows the team management, but anything that now comes out of Volkswagen has to basically pay for itself and make money. And yeah, we could have any sponsor in the world come along, but if they decide in June, July, oh, we haven't got the budget to continue, those cars won't come out of the factory. They will not come out of the workshop for the rest of the season. And that's no good to Ogier. We know Malcolm Wilson will, whether he's got the money or not, so to speak, he will commit to 13 rounds of the championship and he will give everything to try and win. So it doesn't really answer your question, but it's probably looking more favourable that it will be M Sport, I think.
I'm going to bring Ryan at this point. Obviously, we've debated this, right? Do we think there's some legs in holding out for Citroën still? Do you think there's still some weight behind that?
I don't think so, honestly. I think it's the one car Ogier hasn't driven. Therefore, that would probably cast some doubt in his mind. Having said that, I think we know the Citroën will be great. Anytime Citroën have committed to the World Rally Championship without any other distractions, the car's been fantastic. So I do think the car will be the business. But I don't know. It went quite a while ago. They didn't want to let him test it. I don't think that is going to happen personally. I think, as Julian's just mentioned, that the fact that there does seem to be Ford representatives at Dovenby either today or they're imminent. I mean, I heard that rumour earlier in the week, and then it's even made a Spanish magazine, I see today, that there is some officials from America coming over to Dovenby to have a discussion. Well, they might be just discussing prototypes, future road car projects? Fairly doubtful, isn't it? I think we've got to assume it's a discussion about Ford coming back into WRC. And like Julian says, you know, I can see that Ogier's maybe been hanging out for that a little bit, because ultimately, if he did go to M Sport as it is now, it's still a private enterprise. And as much as some people seem to have ruled out Ogier going back to Volkswagen again, the only reason I thought it may be possible was it would work well as a stopgap year for him. A little bit like we saw Loeb drive a private Citroen. If Ogier drove a private Volkswagen for 1 year, then he'd know exactly where the World Championship was, which teams were strong, and he'd have a lot longer to look at his future and decide where his future lied. But I don't think that's his plan A. But I could maybe see it as a fallback plan if the budget was in place to run those Volkswagens.
Jules, do you see anything behind that? Because I must admit, I was thinking only about that the other day with regards to, you know, the private Zara. It was meant to run under a sponsorship banner. I think it was an energy drink or something like that, which ended up disappearing anyway, I think, midway through the season. But it was officially, you know, kind of put to one side, saying, you know, Citroen Racing, you know, officially in inverted commas, and are not putting money into this. You know, it's a purely commercial venture and everything else. But, you know, is there a possibility? Or you just think that's just it's just a done deal now? Because there was Qatari money spoke about, obviously the Red Bull money and things like that. Do you see it at all for anybody? Not just Ogier, for anybody.
Well, there's opportunities. And is it next Friday that the entry shut for Monty? Yeah, they could maybe miss Monty and start again. Anything's possible, but it's getting
not
so
from a homologation point of view. I don't think, Julian. I think from an homologation point of view, the car has to do every rally.
Well, yeah, well, maybe then that kind of like it finishes it. I mean, there is a homologation issue people were tweeting about. It has to be entered by a manufacturer entry to classify for 2017. Well, that's technically, it is kind of true, but it isn't. It's just, as long as the car's homologated, whether it does all rounds or not, that's another story. But because M Sport are not Ford. You know what I mean? M Sport run it for Ford. Ford still homologate the car, which Volkswagen will homologate, and I suspect the bill for that will just get put into the running of the budget. But the budget, I mean, Jos Capito told me 3 years ago it was €3 million a car. And now what that includes for that €3 million, I don't know, for a 13-round championship, whether that's your tyres on top, your fuel on top. Obviously, driver salaries definitely are on top. I think a privateer thing is the only option. Unfortunately, right now, strangely, is Andreas Mikkelsen's only option, which is quite bizarre considering how strong he's been this year. But Ogier, I kind of agree with you, Ryan. I'm not sure whether he'll go back to Citroen. It's a difficult to organise that. Something Ogier said to me in Australia when we did an interview with him about it. And when we finished the interview, microphones were switched off and everything. He said to me, he said, I could just be a dad for 12 months. And I went, realistically, could you? And he went, he said, I can. He said, because the biggest problem I've got is time. So what do you mean time? He goes, we are so close to Monty, he said, to get everything ready and get everything in place. And that was obviously now 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago at least. It was because it was during the recce week we interviewed him. And that's another, that's 2.5 weeks later. He still hasn't got something sorted. And he was struggling. He believed it was struggling for time then. And you read on, I think it was Autosport yesterday, Ogier had stated that, or Malcolm Wilson stated, there was other things they were just trying to finalise now. And I believe that'll be things that people don't really realise. Engine. Who does Ogier Tokum insist on having an M Sport engineer who's been with the development of the car? Does Ogier want his engineer from Volkswagen? He, in theory, has always had his own PR person, not his own dedicated person he takes, but when he was a Citroen, he had his own PR person looking after him. He's been at Volkswagen, he had his own PR person. Now, no disrespect to Anna Rudd at M Sport, but Anna brilliantly looks after everybody and kind of sorts everybody out. Now, that's not to say that Ogier is going to say, well, hang on, I want my own person to look after me and basically ferry me around and do all that kind of stuff. We've got Mick, who was Mick the chef, who kind of is the driver helper now. He takes them here, takes them there and everything. Does Ogier want someone else? And are these the type of things that is they always talk about personal terms, don't they? Yeah, we've sorted the salary out. We're now talking personal terms. And if Malcolm's now got to try and fund three or four more people as Ogier's backroom staff, that's a lot more money as well that he's not maybe thought about, or he's got to accommodate into the whole package.
I'd say, you know, do you know what? I'd like to think I'm relatively got a rough idea of what goes on in the world, but I've never even thought about that. I don't know whether, do you consider that right?
What you see at the front of these teams now is only scratching the surface. You know, you obviously see the drivers, you see the co-drivers, and to a certain degree you see the mechanics and the team managers, but the whole infrastructure behind a World Rally team now is huge. They're a massive operation. Gone are the days where it was a few vans and a few chase cars and off you went. You know, even building the service infrastructure takes a week now. This is a massive entourage now. But just going back to something I wanted to touch on there, it's just on this homologation thing of the Volkswagen. Now, I'm quite happy for somebody to shoot me down in flames and tell me I'm wrong here, but my understanding of the homologation of a World Rally Car is it has to complete the full championship in its first year to validate its homologation. It isn't just a case of putting the paperwork into the FIA. I believe it has to do the full year. And that was the situation with the ProDrive Mini. When ProDrive didn't have the money to run the car for the year, it went to the Motorsport Italia team. They were the factory team to run the car so that the car got its homologation. And I think it's the same with the Volkswagen. If the Volkswagen doesn't complete the full year, it isn't homologated.
But doesn't that then come retrospectively? If it doesn't complete, that then creates a retrospective problem, because it could start in theory and not finish. You'd be in a situation with FIA fines.
No, it's not homologated. That's the way I see it. The car is not homologated unless it completes one full year in the WRC.
But based on that then, and again, this may be me being a little bit thick here, that none of the cars are homologated then?
Not at the minute, but they all commit to doing the full program. That's part of your commitment to develop a WRC.
But, you know, they could commit to it and then two-thirds of the way through basically run out of money or whatever, and then they're into FIA fines.
And the car wouldn't then be homologated going forwards, But I believe if they don't do Monte Carlo, then the car can't be homologated.
Jules, just coming back to, you know, Jari Matti's been announced, kind of been announced. I don't know whether it's officially been announced. It's a messy one, but it wasn't a surprise. But Toyota and Jari Matti, the perfect Finnish marriage and everything else, we're not surprised by that, are we? But what I am surprised about is, I'm sure you've seen that, you've seen the footage of Sebastian Ogier testing the car. You would like to think that maybe something's been developed more even since that test, because it didn't look like a happy bunny, did it, that thing?
No, it didn't look happy. I mean, Sebastian said that the road was very slippy. The car didn't look good. And he said there wasn't a lot you could learn in those conditions, but there was a lot you could learn that wasn't good in those conditions, which was quite telling. And yeah, it's not been officially announced that Latvala is their driver. It's all the rage. Everyone's talking about it. There is a picture on Twitter only about half an hour ago of a Toyota in Corsica testing, which they say is Jari Matti behind the wheel. You can't see inside the car, just the way the photograph's being taken, but they say it's Latvala testing the car. It was kind of, well, I got told that Latvala turned up in Australia with a contract or an offer, at least from Toyota. The thing I found strange about it is, and to be fair, no disrespect to him, Jari probably didn't have very, very many options, pure and simply because Ogier's not made his mind up. It was kind of like, well, I'm not going to wait any longer. Let's go there. But he hadn't even tested the car when he signed the deal, if this is what we're led to believe. And that's quite surprising. But then if you've got no other options, you're just going to take it, aren't you, and say, right, well, let's suck it and see and go on from here. But it didn't look good in that test, I have to say, but it's never looked as bad as that. Whether we're being told it's terribly bad or terribly good, you'll never ever know until we get into Monte, Sweden, Mexico, places like that. We'll not really know, but it didn't look very good at all in that very opening clip of that test. Vanti, what you've got to remember is Ogier stepping in it for the first time as well. So he's kind of getting used to everything, but yeah, it wasn't pretty. He did say it handled a lot better, or it looked or felt a lot better on the gravel. But I just want to see the car for its rear wing. It's massive. I mean, it's quite incredible. I hope the car is competitive. I know they're saying that they want to work on the first year, a bit like Hyundai did. I just hope it is competitive, pure and simply because it's better for it to be competitive than not. And when the news of Volkswagen broke, it kind of was big seeping out on the Tuesday, officially announced on the Wednesday. I was told from a Toyota source when we were over in Australia that when it was officially announced, within 5 minutes, they had picked up the phone and basically to Mr. Toyota and said, how much money have we got to spend on Ogier? Yes, very quickly. Yeah. It was kind of like, yep, okay. We've got to try. And I know Michel Nandan said that he's happy, he's sorted. You'd be surprised. I would be surprised if Nandan hadn't spoke to Ogier just to find out what the situation was, because you don't know what Ogier's situation is. I mean, I suspect, yeah, he's got his Red Bull personal sponsorship. He'll probably have his watch sponsor. He'll have, well, he's supposedly got his Volkswagen contract. Now, I can't see that being fully paid by Volkswagen if he goes and drives somewhere else, which I think is something that they've all had to go to Volkswagen and sort out. If you're starting to get paid from another manufacturer, you might still get something out of Volkswagen. You might get like basically contract failure or something. I can't think of the word now. But when your contract's broken, there's a clause in it, you might get a percentage of your contract. And I think that's taken some time for it to sort out. I might be wrong. They might be getting their full money from Volkswagen and still being able to get some from somewhere else as well. But I would be surprised if that is a situation that Volkswagen isn't in their deal. If we pull out and you go somewhere else, you'll only get a percentage of your deal.
Right. Are you surprised that at the moment it genuinely looks like Andreas could be out of a job?
I'm very surprised. I am surprised, pure and simply because I think it was Portugal. He came to the end of a stage in Portugal. I'm sure it was Portugal. And all of a sudden, it was an afternoon stage, first stage of the afternoon or something. And all of a sudden, he was third on the road or something. But he just whopped the two in front of him. We were like, kind of, wow, that's a good stage time, Andreas. And his words were, well, I'm sick of driving around slowly, so now I'm just going as fast as I can. And two things struck me of, well, hang about. So what have you been doing for the rest of the season so far? Of why are you just driving around? And two, oh, what's happened for you to kind of now think about this? And basically from that moment onwards, he was massively competitive everywhere. Germany, incredibly competitive on tarmac. In Spain, he was there before the accident. Australia was a phenomenal performance. With his road position, third on the road. Yeah, he's got one car between him and Ogier, but he was still so much better. And then people behind him couldn't match him all the time. They could on certain stages, but not all the time. And he really, when he had to deliver, and potentially when the pressure was off slightly, he really kind of did come into his own and show what people have said about him for a long, long time, which I think he's maybe been a bit too cautious for too long. And yeah, I think if you were anybody, realistically, obviously, bar Tommy Mäkinen, if the Toyota story is to believe, why? I think Jari Matti's great. He's a great person, great passionate person, loves the sport. If you're motorsport's based on results, it's a results-based sport. And currently, the last 2 years, Andreas Mikkelsen has performed better than Jari Matti. And he's younger. And yeah, he doesn't hasn't had as many rally wins. But why would you, in theory, currently on current form, take Jari Matti over Andreas Mikkelsen? It is a bit of a strange one.
Right. I'll bring you back in on this one. Are you surprised? Would you, you know, go, we're back to playing fancy WRC manager. That's put M Sport to one side. If you were Tommy Mäkinen, would you have took Andreas?
Well, let me turn it round the other way. Can I understand why I took Jari Matti Latvala? I think there's a good link there, or a huge link there, in Timo Jokke. Timo Jokke was Tommy Mäkinen's manager, and Juha Kankinen, Harry Rovanperä, Tony Gardemeister, etc. We've talked about it before. But he looks after Jari Matti Latvala and has had a hand on Jari Matti's career since he was 17 years old doing the British Championship under the guidance of Pentti Rikkola. And, you know, Timo Jokke took a back step over recent years. He's now back involved in the sport. He's again helping young Finnish drivers. And I think, you know, I'm sure behind the scenes, Timo Jokke has really pushed hard to make sure that Jari Matti is in a good drive next year, and with his old friend Tommy Mäkinen. We've already talked about it. It is an all Finnish team at the minute, so I'm not surprised that Tommy Mäkinen has signed Jari Matti. And I actually hope that you know that Jari Matti's career can be reignited. You know, he's a lovely guy. He's a passionate guy. He loves the sport. He's a great driver. We've seen that. But he's just had his confidence taken away from him. He's had that wind knocked out of his sails. And I think part of that has maybe been having Sebastian Ogier as a teammate. I think had Nico Rosberg not spent 3 years fighting tooth and nail with Lewis Hamilton, he probably wouldn't have retired next year. People just wear you down, and I think Latvala has been worn down by the brilliance of Ogier. In his, shall I say, his team, if he's the lead driver, where he's getting the focus, where he's getting the arm round the shoulder, let's hope it can reignite his career and we can see Jari Matti back to his best. But just to answer your question, if Andreas Mikkelsen doesn't get a front-running drive next year, then it is a crying shame, because he's proved now that he is the real deal. He's had fantastic consistency. He's also shown great speed, and I still think he will get something. I think we'll see him out in something.
Yeah, Jules, do you think, and again, and this is no disrespect to, obviously, Jari Matti is waiting to be confirmed, will be confirmed, whatever, at Toyota. Could we still find a berth at Toyota for Andreas? Because obviously, Juhannan is confirmed. They've got a couple of others. Is it Tino Sunonen and Esko Leppilappi?
I believe Lappi already has his deal there. It's only a partial deal, because I think they're only going to have two cars ready for at least the first three rounds. Get a third Toyota for Corsica, maybe Portugal. But Lappi, all Lappi said to me in Australia was, he says, you'll see me around, because we were talking about it, because we joke about Lappi in interviews at Stage End, because he just seems to be the most uninterested person at a Stage End in the world. Even though he's massively competitive and just he's incredible urge to win and utter self-belief. And he just doesn't seem to get excited. He's at the same level, whether he wins or doesn't win. It's just the same level. And I said to him, I said, well, we'll see a bit more of you next year anyway. And he goes, why do you say that? I said, well, I suspect you'd be in the big team, in the big cars next year. He goes, well, I won't be around any more than what I was this year. And I said, but in the big cars, he goes, well, that's the plan. He says, I will be in the big cars, but I won't be around any more than I was this season, which is like seven rounds or whatever he's done with Skoda.
I just wonder whether, you know, I feel for Juhannan at this point when I say this, but by the same token, if you've got someone like Andreas who, you know, was fighting to be runner up in the championship, that's available. Surely you'd find a way of bringing him in, wouldn't you?
He's not Finnish.
Okay.
And Hannanen very cleverly, I don't know, but Hannanen committed to this program right at the start, and his payment was every round of the World Championship in 2017, and. As far as I'm aware, I know we don't have number ones and number twos, so to speak, but as far as I'm aware, if the Finns stick to the agreement, Hannanen will drive every round, and the third car will be Lappi, and then maybe Sunonen, because Sunonen's been publicly testing the car. Lappi hasn't yet, in theory. If Lappi has driven it, there's been no pictures of it. But Sonnen has publicly been testing the car, and people have been made aware that it's him testing the car. So maybe Lappi's going somewhere else that we don't know about it. You know what I mean? He's maybe got something that we don't know. But I'm unsure. I think it's going to be, if once it's confirmed, it'll be Latvala, Hänninen, Lappi. And I'm unsure about Sonnen. Now, what Sonnen could do now is there's nothing stopping Timo Jokke, who manages him, getting one of these 16 Volkswagens, 2016 spec Volkswagens, and doing the Privateers Championship, the World Cup for Privateers, World Championship for Privateers. But he can do the whole season if he needs to. If he doesn't have to just do the 7 rounds, he can do the whole year and just nominate his rounds. And get a year in a World Rally car. But then Tamo said to me in GB, he said, if I do another year in WRC2, he said, that doesn't really bother me. He says, I'm still very young. So he's quite open, I think, to doing another year in WRC2 and just getting more mileage. But now those Volkswagens have come available, I think there potentially could be a chance that he could end up maybe driving one of them as a development year out of the limelight and in one of those cars. Who knows, you might end up in one of the 17 cars if the right money can be found.
This is the thing, you kind of guided us quite nicely. I was going to come to the 16 cars and get your thoughts on this, because this could take, I use the term pressure, but this could take the pressure, I suppose, away from this driver market if some of these younger drivers could be put in 16 cars. But we debated this last week, Jules, is where does it kind of fit in? You know, it's just as we kind of get a clear kind of format of where we're going, where does it fit in? Will anybody want to be in anything other than a Volkswagen? And are we in danger of just having potentially three Volkswagens?
Well, to be fair, it was Martin Prokop who has really campaigned and pushed for this kind of championship. And when Martin sat down and discussed it, and I listened to him, we had something to eat in his hospitality in the service park, and he said you've got to see the positives of it. And when he sold it to me, I kind of was like, yeah, I do see this, you know what I mean? Because you've got these privateers who are never going to win a World Rally. They are never going to win a World Rally. And as we know, manufacturers come and go. We've seen it with Volkswagen. They've come and they've gone. Privateers, well-funded privateers, seem to be there year in, year out. But they've got nothing for themselves. And when they go, yeah, Prokop's slightly different. It's a wealthy business. It's a wealthy family. And everyone in theory in the World Championship to a degree has to have some wealth somewhere. But it's when they go to their sponsors and their backers of, oh, so what kind of positions do you finish? Where did you finish in the championship? I finished 10th. Oh, you finished. But I was top privateer. Oh, so you won the World Championship for privateers? Well, no, because we don't have one. So it kind of potentially, and what it would do is we lost NASA this year. Al Raji, he basically came and did 6 rounds of the World Championship in a World Rally car just to try it. And yeah, you could end up with NASA and Abdulaziz Al-Khawari and Yazid, all in Volkswagens, for example. But I think there is a place for it. I really do. Why I feel that's potentially not being done in the best way is what I would have done with it is it's 7 rounds. I think your 6 scores count. I think that's what it is. Or is it 8 rounds and your 7 scores count? Whatever the numbers are, I'd have made them set events so that you knew you were always competing against everyone. Because what's going to happen, it's you've got to pick your 7 events over the 13. So you are going to get some drivers who are going to say, I tell you what, I'm going to go to Mexico and Argentina and Australia because not many people will go all that way. Or I might go to Monte because not many people have their money ready for Monte. I'll go there and I'll get some big points. And you could have someone winning a world championship by basically avoiding everybody else. And that's when it wouldn't be right. What I'd have done is, right, it's 7 rounds, bang. And then all 7 compete. Everyone who's in the championship competes against each other. That's what I would have done. Now, that's the only thing. I agree with the championship. I do agree with it. Also, what you've got to remember is we've got to look at the manufacturers who are involved as well. Even though they're not official cars, like there won't be official teams, so to speak. But Hyundai have got 4 or 5 of these cars. They're €500,000 each, second hand, maybe 350,000. Malcolm's got a few, Volkswagen have a few, Citroen have a few. They're completely worthless at the minute. If that championship hadn't really happened, there's not many places in the world where you can use World Rally cars now. So it's basically given these cars a bit more where they can write the value off them and at least get some money back on them. So, and at the end of the day, if we didn't have the manufacturers and they were just completely piling millions of pounds and then scrapping millions of pounds of the cars, it's kind of a bit stupid, in my opinion. So at least it gives the cars another year or two, and it keeps the money flowing around the World Rally Championship, which is only a good thing. So I agree in principle with the championship. I think that maybe it would have been better to actually nominate the rallies that they did. The FIA say, right, this is the rallies that championship is, and go from there. So that would be my only thing I would have changed on it. But I think it's a good idea. And as you said, Tony, what's to stop now? Sunderland, other youngsters, you know what I mean? There's other youngsters around, but Sunderland's a perfect one, you know, who are out there who want to step up but can't get into the World Championship manufacturer team. Tell you what, why don't we have a go at this championship and get 7 or 8 rounds of World Rally Car experience?
We potentially could have a glorified ride Junior World Rally Championship with 2016 cars.
You could do, but don't forget this comes back to cost. And one of the reasons the R5 cars have been very popular is because there's significantly less money to run, particularly over the course of a season than a WRC car. And I think what Julian said there, you know, in all, what probably would have made things clearer is if there'd been set rallies. And I think exactly the same for WRC2. You know, we've seen WRC2 grow and grow, and as we talked about last week, my concern with this privateer's 2016 World Rally Car Championship, for whatever way you want to describe it, is that it muddies the waters. You know, we have a clear second division at the minute, and that's WRC2. Now we're bringing in Euro World Rally Cars, and it does confuse things a bit. So if those have been separated on separate rounds of the World Championship, it would almost make a bit more sense, because even with WRC2 last year, you know, we had the situation where Elvin was leading the championship for most of the year, and it looked like he you know, he could still potentially win it, whereas he actually couldn't because he'd done his rallies, and then you had Sunderland and Lappy that still had rallies to do. And we talk about making rallying simple. It was confusing for people within the sport to understand who had rallies left, what the drop score situation was. So there was an opportunity to make things simpler, and unfortunately that hasn't been taken. But I think it would be a shame to lose some of the some of the prestige from WRC2 and the competitive element, because it's been a great championship of up and coming young drivers fighting it out, fighting to prove they're, you know, they're capable of moving up to the top level, if you like. And I think it would be a shame if we lost that by spreading it thinly across both WRC2 and the Euro WRC cars.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And now, can I just float something past you first, Jules, and then I'll come to you, Ryan, on this. This isn't cynical in any way, shape or form. Just an idea. The JWRC tender has gone to M Sport. Now, obviously, it is going to be for the R2 Fiesta. Do we see any scope further down the line, perhaps, to see the JWRC go in R5? I'll come to you first, Jules, on that.
No, I wouldn't have thought so, because as Ryan's pointed out now, your juniors, is your entry level, and that's got to be in a car that's affordable. Then you had WRC3, WRC2, then World Rally Car. For me, WRC juniors, junior WRC, has got to stay R2-ish. it's kind of got to stay in amongst there, just pure and simply as an entry. If you start to get too expensive, you end up not necessarily seeing the talent because people can't afford it. You go R5 straight away. But also, people should be made to learn the ropes as well. You know, this is where the British Championship suffered. The Finnish Championship suffered the same. Is kids were getting €500,000 backing or whatever and just completely missing out their national championship and going and doing three or four rounds of the WRC2 or SWRC as it was called in those days. And you were kind of like, they were doing three or four rallies and then just getting nothing and then just basically disappearing off the radar. And I think if you didn't have that starting point, you'd lose more people than you're actually going to gain, because there's got to be a definite ladder. I see what Ryan's saying about this world championship for privateers coming in. I suspect that will be full of Arabs and very rich privateers, and potentially Vitelli. I don't think Vitelli will be in it. I think he wants a main car. But I think it'll be rich privateers who can afford world rally cars, not necessarily wanting to aim to the very, very top of their sport. They want to come and have a weekend of fun in the best possible car they can get. But I think juniors should start at the bottom.
Right, are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, absolutely. For two reasons. Firstly, from a cost point of view, I mean, already to go to WRC in an R2 car is, you know, in the greater scheme of things, it's normal people, it's astronomical, the cost even to run an R2 car at World Championship level. So I think to go beyond that really would make it even more difficult to achieve that. And we have seen drivers from national championships, from our own British championship, go from driving an R2 car on the British championship to driving a car on the World Championship very, very competitively, and long may that continue. So I think it's important that we have that stepping stone up to then the four-wheel drive cars. And again, that's the second part of it. I'm a firm believer that if you start in a relatively low-powered front-wheel drive car and learn to drive the absolute wheels off that, it does help when you come to the bigger cars. Now, there's been exceptions to that rule, and we've talked about them before. Andreas Mikkelsen, a fairly obvious one. You know, he learned his trade in a WRC car. Latvala was in a WRC car early on and then actually went back to front-wheel drive cars. But as much as there is exceptions, you know, the Augiers, the Loebs of this world came from one-mate championships. They came from driving the apps. Absolute wheels off a relatively underpowered car before they moved on, and for me, I still think that's the best way.
Now, JWRC, Jules, it's kind of, I think the best way of describing it, it's kind of been on the decline. I think, obviously, I think the DS3s, we know several people that went down that route. You know, Ossian Price has been very competitive, of course, in the DMAC Drive Trophy, young Welshman from our shores, so to speak. Then they went with the Max kit on them and things like that. It just got really, really, really expensive. And I think Citroën Racing have kind of obviously moved on now from that. So from your understanding, was there anybody else in for JWRC?
Not that I'd heard. I mean, I heard there was a driver who did JWRC, not in 2016, but I think he did it in, I think it was 14 and 15 he did it, or definitely 14. And he said that with a test, they were spending €60,000 a round. Do JWRC. Wow. Now, that for me is not a junior world rally championship. That is not a junior world rally championship. And you've got to do six rounds or something. That's a proper budget. That's kind of like, that's full time. And and Malcolm, I don't know how he's going to exactly work it, but we know with the Drive DMAC Trophy thing, which is, I think, being the kind of the master plan behind it, I think he's had €100,000 plus your expenses. I know you've got to insure it and things like that, and there's certain amounts of money you get free, but he's filled every slot for the last 2 years, and it's been massively competitive, and you can't fault it. Citroën have got their experience back now. They want to go World Rally Car. They want to throw everything behind it. I feel it got a bit too expensive with your junior World Rally Championship. It did get a bit expensive.
I think those DS3s, you know, I was fortunate enough, I, you know, bless him, James Grint, who's now doing European rallycross and supercars and stuff like that. It was cheaper for him to run a European supercar in rallycross than it was to run his DS3. You know, because everything had to go back to 3MO and Citroën Racing and things like that. And they were like mini World Rally cars. You know, they were like a front wheel drive World Rally car, and everything was proper on them as you would expect from Citroën Racing. But you know, they were expensive, and then they added the Max kit, and the Max kit, they were having problems with and things like that. And yeah, I was hearing, I must admit, I'd never heard a €60,000 bill for an event, but I was getting, you know, big numbers, which is why so many people were really, really struggling to complete the championship. And that's where perhaps, you know, we've just spoke about Sebastian Ogier, we spoke about Sebastian Loeb, you know, the JWRC back in the day was all had manufacturers,
but,
didn't
but again, it did have manufacturers, but again, the numbers were astronomical. You know, in the Super 1600 days, if it was £50,000 a rally was commonplace, and that was £50,000 at the time. And so it was incredibly competitive when you had, you know, our own Guy Wilkes in there, and Chris Meek, and the Umo Arvers, the PG Andersons, etc. But we not only that, we had MG, we had Ford, we had Fiat, we had Renault, we had Peugeot, Citroën, Suzuki, all with effectively factory teams. But again, as soon as you get factory teams involved, then the cars develop and the costs go out the window. And I remember seeing Chris Meek turn up, I think it was to the Ulster Rally one year when I was doing it in a C2, the latest C2, and that was just a mini World Rally car. It was a fantastic piece of kit at the time, but it drove the cost of Super 1600 through the absolute roof. And the nice thing about the Drive DMAT Championship is the cars are all looked after centrally, it's all run under one roof, and there is strict controls in place to make it A level playing field and B to control costs. And like you said, even with the DS3s were a fantastic car, but they were continuing the development. You could run them openly, and as soon as you run things openly with a fairly unlimited situation regarding testing and mileage, then the costs just spiral. So to run cars centrally and keep everything closely regulated, that's the only way to keep the cost down.
There speaks a man who obviously tried to do JWRC in his early years, who knows those figures and went through that pain of trying to make it happen. Just going back to JWRC and what we've just been saying, Jules, with regards to the calendar. Of course, JWRC calendar's fixed. Any particular reasons or thoughts that you've got why the FIA don't fix the calendar for WRC2 and indeed what we've just been talking about with this new privateer WRC Cup?
I think, well, I don't know. The juniors, obviously, yeah, that's a fixed thing. When we had previous promoters running the World Rally Championship, what they used to do is we had, it was the Junior World Rally Championship and Production Car Cup World Rally Championship. And basically, there was 14 events or 16 events as we had in some of those days. It was, they got 7 each and everybody turned up. The juniors all turned up on their 7 events, then the production championship all turned up on their 7 events, and they split it. And I think potentially that's what, as I said, we should have done with the Privateers World Rally Championship for next year. You would have noticed that WRC2 now, 3 rounds have to be competed by every driver. Portugal, Germany and GB. If you want to be classified in the final championship results, you have to do those 3 rallies. You can pick your other 4, but they have to be competed on. So that means those rallies will have every single driver who registers for WRC2. Now, WRC2, for me, yeah, I would try and make everyone compete against everybody, because as Ryan says, when you're up against people, you raise your level, you raise your game to try and beat them. If you're just competing against yourself or some really, really gentleman driver who's just going for the fun of it, your performance doesn't go up. And potentially you could make it. The best way with the Privateers World Championship for me would have been, because I think we'll get similar numbers for that than we will for WRC3. And what I'd have said is, we've got 13 rounds of the championship, right? We're going to have 7 for this and 7 for that. That's 14. We haven't got 14 rounds. Okay, so they do this 7 and they do this 7, and one of them will mix where they'll be both there. And then that way is every rally gets in theory, the World Rally Championship. It gets either WRC 3 or the Privateers World title, and it has a chance of WRC 2. And then at least every rally has got at least two sections of the championship coming, and potentially a third. Now, what was interesting in Rally Finland last year, not many entries. We had 44 registrations for WRC 2 in 2016. And in Finland, I think only 9 turned up. One of the ultimate rallies in the World Rally Championship, the one that everyone wants to turn around and say, I did Rally Finland, wow. And the clerk of the course rang the other entries of, why haven't you come to Finland? Why aren't you coming? What's wrong? Is it too expensive, etc.? Well, no, we've got no chance against the Finns. Why are we going to turn up and spend money if we've got no chance against the Finns? Now, as a competitor, if you believe you're as good as anyone else and you want to be the best and you want to win the championship, you've got to go and take the Finns on in their own backyard and try and whop them. And that then creates a problem of like, we had no disrespect to him, but Michel Fabre in WRC3, he did Mexico, he did Argentina, he did Australia. He was going to go and do China. He won 3 rounds in the World Rally Championship in WRC3 because no one else turned up, only him. He played the game. Fair enough. That's what the rules allow. He played the game. He was living the dream. He was doing the World Rally Championship and winning.
Go on. Sorry, Gilles.
I was going to say, I potentially would try and... I would try and allocate events. That's my favorite. Problem is you get then the events get a bit disappointed if they don't get WRC2, which in Spain brings 30 entries, in Portugal brings 42 entries. It's hard then when you've got to knock events out, but then you bring in the other championships. But as a rule, I would probably try and have it that you competed against your rivals as often as possible.
To be fair, that's how I won BBC4. So I'm not going to knock anybody who just turns up and does the rallies, but still, there you go. There you go. But boys, believe it or not, we're about 50 minutes into this podcast, and I don't know whether we've actually found a home for anybody yet or done anything else. Gilles, I probably should give you a heads up at this point. Normally towards the end of our section, we normally have an any other business. Now, it can be anything outside of what we spoke about, anything you've spotted in rallying or whatever. So you may want to have a little bit of a think about your any other business. I know Ryan's got his there. He's ready to go with his. But I just wanted to just blast through a couple of bits and pieces. Folks, if you are listening to this, we've got a bit of a competition this week as well. The guys behind We Are The Terrors, who do merch, t-shirts and mugs and keyrings and stickers and everything else, do amazing stuff. Check out the website and follow them on Twitter. We Are The Terrors, all together on Twitter. But they have got a t-shirt that they've produced, which is the Class of 95, which is basically the outline of all the cars that were around the 95 WRC. So we need to set a question for that, and I was hoping Ryan was going to come up with the question.
I've been working on it.
Because we were going to ask Jules, and we thought, no, that's probably going to put him under a little bit of pressure because we haven't really teed him up for this. So we've got Ryan ready for the question. But before we crack on, a couple of things, and again, this may all come back to where we started with this as well. M Sport seem to be getting busy creating more one-make championships again outside of what they were doing. There's a new Fiesta that's been announced, Jules. I don't know whether you've heard anything about this one at all. I haven't managed to speak to anybody yet. I am up there next week, so I'm going to have a chat with a couple of people when I'm up there. But there's an R2 National car. Now, I wouldn't mind your opinion on this because you're a man who did a lot of rallying and homologated cars and stuff like that. And this thing now of having cars outside of homologation, it's happened with the Vauxhall Adam, of course, with the one make championship that they've run over in Germany, and I think they ran over in France as well. Now, there's going to be a one make championship R2 National car, which we've been corrected a couple of times, and I know Andrew Wheatley's been quoted this week in Motorsport News that technically it will be homologated, but you've got the option to upgrade. What are your thoughts on these cars coming out and then basically investing so much money in them and not being homologated?
If it's got its own championship, like we keep saying, you've got to start somewhere at the bottom, and you've got to give Malcolm some credit, and like Opel do it. I mean, you just look at that Opel Adam Cup in Germany. The German journalists are furious about it because it's become so successful. there's hardly a German in it. You know what I mean? It's full of Finns, Poles, Spanish. There's Czech drivers in it, and it was a Finnish driver who won it this year. 2 years ago, it was a Swedish driver. Because it's such a big prize, which is in a route, you get to do the European Junior Rally Championship. But because it's manufacturer backed, it's everyone wants to be there, and if that brings competition and that brings people in and brings people through, is it a bad thing? I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to make it affordable to get people in. That's the biggest thing. I mean, we've all three of us on this line now have all competed and all tried to find the most competitive way of being competitive and enjoy our sport and try and spend as least money as possible, but to get as high up the ladder as we possibly can. And it's you can't just have big budgets and big cars and things like that. And if you have a proper structured championship at the lower runs, it adds a bit more to those championships as well. It adds a bit more to those rallies where they've got proper cars coming in, and it gives people something to aspire to as well. So I think you've got to give as much encouragement to these things as possible.
Right, if I can come to you on this one, I need to perhaps say this slightly more succinctly as well, by the way. The R2 National car, again, I need to speak to Andrew Wheatley about this, who's the man behind every one-make car that M Sport have kind of been involved with. Andrew was kind of behind it because he did a lot of the one-make championships, and he truly does get you know, what we've all been speaking about and passionate about, you know, a one-make championship car. But basically, I think the concern got to the point where the R2T, as it was a very, very expensive car as an entry-level car. It's the car that's going to be used in the Junior World Rally Championship, of course. And they wanted to almost have a rung below. Now, that was the R1 car originally, but the R1 car really didn't take off. And the idea behind the R1 car is that you could keep adding to it and you could create an R2 car. Now that R2 car's gone, if everyone's with me so far, now that R2 car's gone and it's gone to the R2T, they still wanted to have a car below that. Which is this going to be this national car, in inverted commas, but apparently it can still run in homologated classes, but it's not obviously going to be anywhere near the pace. Do you see the value in being able to buy a car, run it and add to it, or do you see it as everyone's going to want the fastest car anyway in a one-way championship?
No, I absolutely see the point. If that's the spec for the championship, then it's almost irrelevant what the car is. Because, I'll go back to, we've talked about it a lot of times, so I'll go back to the 205 days that I started in and Andrew Wheatley started in as well. I mean, I must have competed against Andrew for 4 or 5 years in one-way championships. And the 205 in itself, it was halfway between Group N and Group A. It wasn't one or the other. But it didn't matter because that's what you were competing against. And as long as everybody's in the same car, it really doesn't matter. And what Julian was just talking about with the Opel Adam One Mate Championship in Germany, wouldn't that be fantastic if we could get back to that in the UK, where we've got a strong One Mate Championship with 15 or 20 entries, getting overseas entries like we saw in the past with the best One Mate Championships. And that's what drives the competition. And then if you want to up-spec the car later on and make it into a full-spec R2T car, then brilliant. But I think the important thing is that you have a cost-effective one-make car that creates a level playing field and creates great competition. And that competition drives you on. And as Julian said, it helps support the rallies. If you suddenly see another 15, 20 entries coming for this one-mate championship, it helps support the rallies. It's amazing how high up overall these one-mate cars get, because the competition's there and everybody's driving each other on and they're beating a lot of the faster cars as well. So if you can have a cost-effective car that you can compete in a one-mate championship with, I think that's brilliant. And the fact that you can up-spec it a little bit later on, that's great as well, because the R2T, I don't know the exact price, but I'm guessing they're in the region of £50,000 now, because I think even the 1.6 R2 car, the previous generation, was in that region. So it is an awful lot of money. So if you can have a more cost-effective version of that, then great. And I think the problem with R1 was R1 maybe just wasn't interesting enough. We see the R2T cars, they sound good and they're exciting to drive, and hopefully this this new category of car, if you like, can capture enough of that that fun to drive element, but with nicely contained costs.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And very quickly, my only other business is congratulations to Merion Evans on his win. We mentioned Silver Fern Rally, and we do try to cover everything here. Silver Fern Rally, epic five-day rally, some of the best stages in the world. And yeah, congratulations. We did obviously speak about it at the midway point last week. So congratulations to Merion Evans. And yeah, what an experience. 5 days. Julian, did you ever do 5 days in a rally car?
No. Three would be the Manx GP when I did GP. How long was GP 94? Was that 3 or 4 days? I don't think I ever did 5 days. I think 3 or 4 would be the most I did.
I just can't imagine what it would be like to be in a rally car for 5 days. I can just imagine getting to the point where you want to throttle your co-driver. Maybe this is my co-driver. I'm really not sure. Ryan Champion, have you got your any other business ready?
Well, then you do a proper rally like Safari, which is 8 days, don't you?
But anyway. Oh, here we go. I'll tell you what, I forgot. Julian, I genuinely forgot that Ryan had done the Safari then. How did I forget that?
I'm very envious of that as well. Very, very envious of that.
Don't fuel it, Jules.
Let's see. Hopefully WRC will go back there, but definitely conflicting rumours on that one. You know, there's a will for it to go back to Kenya, but whether it ever will, I don't know. But any other business this week, keeping in touch with some of the further flung countries from where we are, is just keeping an interesting watch on the AP4 rules that they're applying in Australia and New Zealand. And we were just talking about cost, and we know cost is a massive issue in rallying. Not only that, when you're in Australia and New Zealand and you're a long way from the teams that are building the more cost-effective R5 cars, then they've come up with their own solution. And when I say R5 is cost-effective, I mean that is in inverted commas. An R5 car is cost-effective compared to a World Rally car. Is it cost-effective compared to the Group N cars that Julian and I spent years in, the Mitsubishis and the Subarus? Not at all. You know, R5 is nigh on £200,000 now. And what they've done with the AP4 rules is really create their own category where you can take any basic body shell, any sort of super mini, and use the same suspension uprights, same drive shafts, same cross members, same transmission, and create an AP4 car. So you develop the engine for that car. So for example, we talked to Hayden Padden a few months back about the I-20 AP4 car they were building. I think there's a Yarison build, there's a Mini about to be built. They've also just built a Mazda 2. And you can, like I said, you can effectively use the same running gear, you just develop the engine for the car. And I think it's quite an interesting formula. They're seeing these cars coming in at somewhere between sort of £120,000-£130,000 range. I mean, it's still an expensive car. But having said that, it's substantially cheaper than R5. And really what they're wanting to replace in that part of the world is the Group N cars that have been going year on year. The Mitsubishis and the Subarus that really have been the solid base of their championship. Again, we've talked about Group N a lot on this show. Unfortunately, Group N is falling by the wayside. It was a very cost-effective way of going rallying, and that's disappeared. So I think these new AP4 rules are an interesting idea, and it'll be great to keep tabs on how they perform and, you know, on how that performs in terms of success and longevity going forwards.
Jules, have you heard too much about this AP4? We've kind of tried to keep our finger on the pulse. We got Harry Bates coming up at the end of this podcast, who's kind of hinting towards that way. They may be going over in Australia. Have you had a little look into this?
Apart from spending 2 or 3 hours with Hayden Panda in Argentina when we were doing a feature with him, and he was telling us all about it as we drove to do the feature, and then we did the feature, and then we drove back in the car and everything, and he was telling us all about it. And when you've got someone like Hayden Panda who is busy trying to make himself a superstar, well, he is a superstar, but trying to win himself a World Rally Championship, but he still puts in so much to his national championship and basically the sport back at home. You've got to give him a huge amount of credit for that. And yeah, if Hayden's kind of like on the ball trying to promote it, you get a lot of people who talk about it, a lot of drivers and people like that who talk about it. Yeah, yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. But you got Hayden Panda going, yeah, this is what I am doing. You know what I mean? He kind of like, Group N, as Ryan says, Group N cars are disappearing. And they can't afford R5s. They're a long way away, as he said, from where they're all built and manufactured. So why don't we come up with something else? And they've come up with this idea. They've obviously, Hayden was in discussions with everyone about it. And he's led by example of, rather than just talking about it, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to help you guys. I'm going to produce a Hyundai. Yeah, he's got the backing of Hyundai New Zealand and things like that. But they'll see if he can make it run and make it work. Pattern Rally Sport, so to speak, as well, might get a bit of a deal building them and making them and then running them. So it is in theory potentially about business, but what I like about Hayden is the idea's been thought of, it's come up with it, and he said, right, I'm going to embrace this. I'm actually going to build a car and see what we can do with it. But other than what Hayden's told me, I know very, very little about it, to be fair.
No, to be fair, I still think you know quite a little bit more than what you realise when you start at that, but still, there you go.
Just sorry to come in on that as well, because this today is the New Zealand shootout for the new Hyundai New Zealand driver as well. So we'll come back to that next week. And also the DMAC Fiesta shootout is finishing as we speak. So we'll come back to those two driver shootouts next week.
I'd be interested to see what goes on there. Julian, before we go any further, have you thought of anything you want to get off your chest? Have you got in any other business at all?
Not that I can think of. I think we've talked about a lot about business. Yeah, I can't think of anything.
That's all right then. That's all right. Well, we're going to go with Ryan's question now for this fantastic T-shirt, which I must admit, I really, really want one. It's cool. It's got all the outlines of all the, as I say, all the 95 spec world cars. Ryan Champion, are you going to set the question?
I am.
For our listeners?
I am.
Okay.
And there's actually not one answer. There's four answers. It features...
Come on, Jude. give us a chance.
Let me explain. So, fantastic teacher by fantastic T-shirt, I should say, by We The Terrace. So it features the Group A Subaru Impreza. Quite like that car. It features the Group A Evo 3, which I'm sure will be Julian's favourite. It also features the 205 Celica and the Escort Cosworth. And to win this T-shirt, the question is, when did each one of those four cars make its World Championship debut?
Ooh.
That's a good question, because if you had one answer, you'd probably get a lot of people getting it right. But if they've got to get four parts of it right, there's less chance of a lot of people getting that right.
Okay, I think you need to repeat that question.
Okay.
Just repeat it as succinctly as what you possibly can.
We're talking about the four Group A cars from the 1995 season, the Impreza, the Evo 3, the 205 Celica, and the Escort Cosworth. When did they make their World Championship debut as a factory car?
There you go. Folks, what we will ask you to do, if you can drop us a message either on Facebook or on Twitter, if you do a direct message on either of those, @Absolute_Rally, of course, on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally, just drop us a message there. And we'll do a little bit of a prize draw type of thing, if they're correct, of course, like we did when we did the stuff with Dirt. We are going to be doing some more stuff with Dirt as well, which I'll talk to you about in the new year. Anyway. That brings us to the end of this epic section, by the way. We have got one more bit before we finish. We've got Harry Bates, so I have got my hat trick of Aussies, albeit I didn't get them three in a row. I got two, and then we've had a break, and then we've got Harry Bates, who was runner-up to Molly Taylor, and very magnanimous he was as well. And yeah, quite an interesting chat with a very, very young man who's hoping to do more. In fact, we started our conversation, we recorded this last week, and it's when M Sport had just been awarded the Junior World Rally Championship, and that was a little bit of what we were talking about. So I hope you enjoy that section anyway. But Julian Porter, thank you so much for joining us on our second to last episode before Christmas. I assume now you've got your feet up until Monte Carlo.
Yeah, half. Yeah, quite literally got my feet up right now. You've got my feet up, relaxing. But yeah, so yeah, just waiting to see what's about a time. Well, you never know. By the time you get this turned around and actually produced, we could actually know everything that we've been talking about. But
everything we could, everything we've been talking about, we just chop that bit off. Just listen to the last 20 minutes with Ali Bates.
That's it. So, but yeah, relaxing and basically waiting for the news. As much as whether we have inside knowledge or not, I get some tip offs, we get some hints, we get some stuff. But as every rally fan around the world, I'm waiting to see what the likes of Ogier and Mikkelsen do and see what that does for the driver market. And Volkswagen leaving, a lot of people said it was a disaster. I'm not so sure. They're a great team, great stuff. We just lost the team that basically dominated our sport for 4 years. What we now have is potentially an open market. And what we definitely do have is the biggest driver shakeup in the World Rally Championships history, I think. And if Malcolm Wilson lands Sebastian Ogier, that is, for me, the biggest story since Colin McRae signed for Ford all those years ago.
Do you know what? I couldn't have put it better myself. Ryan Champion, thank you, as ever, for joining us. And, of course, setting the question. We will be back next week. We've got a few different things happening next week. We've got the lovely Bex, who will be joining us next week. And we're also going to have our end-of-season quiz. Yeah, I haven't thought about how I'm going to do it yet, but trust me, folks, it'll be fun. Sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. As I say, thank you to Julian Porter. Thank you to Ryan Champion. He will be back next week, and we will have Jack Bengen, who will be back from roundy-roundy stuff as well. And, yeah, thanks for the download, folks, and, yeah, enjoy the rest of the podcast.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. A man we should have had with us last week that would have completed my hat trick of Aussies, but I didn't. I thought, why not? Why don't we save him? Why don't we? In his words, he said we were saving the best for last because we've done this before. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to pull away the smoke and mirrors right now. But Harry Bates, welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, listen, we've wanted to get you on for a while. Coming from a rally background, albeit not quite as the same level as you, I'm always tentative when I ask this question. Can we ask you about the championship that has just kind of just slipped away from you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was pretty heartbreaking and devastating to lose the championship the way we did. But certainly talking about it's been a part of getting over it for me. So more than happy to talk to you about it as well.
Now, before we go any further with the championship, I think. Perhaps, and maybe this is the youthful exuberance here. I feel quite an old man now saying that, but the youthful exuberance. You started rallying in 2014.
Yeah, exactly. So this is pretty much my second full year of rally that I've just completed.
So that's a phenomenal thing to talk about, the disappointments and missing out on your, you know, the Australian rally title only 2 years into your career. Is actually quite an impressive feat in some ways when you think about it.
Yeah, and I think looking back at our year two, that's certainly going to be what we have to reflect on, is the fact that it was an amazing year. We certainly didn't expect to turn up and be quite as competitive as what we were, but we had a strong year. We had good pace at each of the rounds. And, you know, for my second year of four railing and my first crack at the Australian Championship, we were very happy with how it turned out.
I want to ask you about the car, because I've got a bit of a thing, naturally aspirated. I was a big fan of F2 cars, Super 1600. I think most rally fans were. And then came Super 2000, and the Super 2000 now kind of been replaced, you know, across the world by R5, but you're still running a Super 2 car. Just tell us a little bit about that car.
Yeah, so my Super 2000 car was developed locally in Australia. By my dad and his team in our workshop, and it was developed basically with the help of Toyota Australia to win the Australian Rally Championship back in 2007 and 2008. And it's still a very good car. It's probably getting a bit long in the tooth now, but you know it's been a really strong car this whole time. And back when it was developed, I think it was among probably the strongest S2000 cars in the world. Back when there was only sort of the Fiat Arbus and the Peugeot 207. So it is a really cool car. And yeah, I'm a big fan of S2000 like you.
Now, you say that the car's getting a little bit long in the tooth. Is there any way we can update it for next year, or are we looking at alternatives? Because, you know, the family business, and of course, for the uninitiated, which I'll be staggered, by the way, if anybody's listening to this, who doesn't know the family connection and everything else, obviously, Neil Bates is your father, you know, just a legend. I can't think of your dad driving anything other than a Toyota. So where does that kind of leave you moving forward?
I've been a bit of a beneficiary, I guess, of a dad's connection with Toyota. They helped me with some sponsorship in the Australian Championship this year. I had Toyota Genuine Parts on board for the whole season. And, you know, like Dad, I'm very passionate about Toyota as a brand. Obviously, seeing them being, you know, coming back into the WRC is really exciting for me. So moving forward, for sure, I'd like to keep what I have here and keep working with Toyota in Australian rallying. But obviously, we'd like to sort of take what I'm doing overseas into Europe at some point as well.
Now, that was going to be something I was going to ask you a little bit later on. Obviously, you and Molly are great friends. Obviously, Molly Taylor, who was on the show last week, Australian rally champion. We know Molly has been over here. She was in Italy. She lived up in Cumbria. She is the British Rally Championship, European Rally Championship. Is she kind of almost set the benchmark of what you feel you need to do in terms of getting experience now?
Yeah, absolutely. Molly's definitely someone I look up to in my rallying career. Not only has she been really successful in Europe and all that sort of thing, but she did it the hard way. She moved over there, really jumped into the deep end and immersed herself in becoming a professional rally driver, which she's now achieved with Subaru. So for me, being friends with her, being able to talk to her about rallying the whole time is obviously really helpful. And you know, now we're competing against each other in the Australian Championship, so it's all a little bit strange, but it works.
Well, there's the crossovers, which is well-trodden ground, and I'm not going to take you through. Obviously, we're just mentioning your dad at the top. Obviously, your dad's co-driver is Molly's mum, and, you know, the families are really, really close. So that must be, that must have been a weird final day for all the families, because there's so many crossovers between you guys that it must have been such a heart-wrenching thing to see, you know, obviously you go out, but then, of course, it's Molly and everything else. How did anybody keep a lid on that in service?
I'm not quite sure, and it's funny. My dad and Molly's mum, Coral, were in the rally as well. They were competing in the historic section of Rally Australia in their Toyota Celica. I think their car would have actually been more tense than it would have been between Molly and I during the rally because they were both barracking for their respective kids. But, you know, they know better than anyone the highs and the lows of rallying, so, you know, Coral was very much able to relate to me and my disappointment, but at the same time be elated for Molly. So, and same for Dad.
I say the season finale was Rally Australia for you guys. There was a section in there, you know, for the rally, and you know, I've seen this before where the final round of the British Rally Championship has been Wales Rally GB, and I'm kind of torn on that one a little bit. Are we lost in the you know, the hoo-ha of the World Rally Championship? Does it take something away when your championship decider is part of a World Championship round, or did it add to it?
Yeah, I have mixed feeling on this subject as well. We knew at the start of the year that the final round was going to be Rally Australia. And to be honest, I was quite excited about that because Rally Australia is my favourite event in this country. It's got some of the best roads we have, and they suit me really well. So from that point of view, I was looking forward to it. The fact that it was a WRC event almost felt like a bonus to me. The ARC this year had a lot of hype around it coming into the final round, so I didn't really feel like we were lost in it all. As I said, if anything, the World Rally part of it just felt like a bonus.
That last, the last event was a proper championship, finale as well, wasn't it? You know, Simon Evans came into it as points leader. Simon ended up having a couple of punctures. You inherited the lead. You were pretty much nailed on is the wrong word because we never use that term in rallying because nothing's nailed on in rallying. But, you were definitely in control of the event. And then you got a puncture, which then brought Molly back into play again. It was just a roller coaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, coming into the event, we knew it was always going to be like that. You know, whoever had the strongest event was probably going to take out the title. Simon himself, I probably rated as the main competition. He is a four-time national champion here. He knows how to win, and he's done it plenty of times before. So he pulled out a 30-second lead on us on day one, which I was actually quite happy with. We stayed in contention. And then on the long stage on Saturday morning, he lost 20 seconds to us. We managed to take 20 seconds out of him in 50K, which put us right back in contention for the rally. And I was sort of had my tail in the air. I was pretty happy with that. And then in the afternoon on the Saturday, he had his bad luck, which was a couple of punctures, which gave us a 3-minute lead overnight. So that was exciting. I didn't quite know how to feel. I hadn't been in that position before. Unfortunately, it didn't all work out for us because we got our puncture on Sunday morning, which then handed Molly Taylor the rally lead and the championship. So, it was a really mixed feeling for me on that podium, actually. I was obviously really disappointed. I just lost my opportunity to win the ARC at 21 years of age, which I think a lot of people were finding a pretty exciting prospect. But at the same time, we got our first female national champion. So, and I was really excited for Molly because she's a great friend.
Now, moving forward, you have to build on this. We've alluded to this at the top. You've been rallying 2 years, really, 2.5 years. Obviously, you've grown up in the family and everything else. Can you remember the first time you drove a rally car?
I can, actually. My first rally car was a front-wheel drive Corolla, so just a standard 1.8-litre engine, a 2ZZ motor, actually. So it's a pretty good sort of little engine. And Molly Taylor was my co-driver in my first event. I did Rally Batemans Bay, just a coastal event, and started off pretty slowly, but by the end of the rally, we were going okay. I think Molly gave away co-driving duties at that point and said, no, now you have to get someone else. So
were you one of those, because we hear these stories of people like Andreas Mikkelsen, who was driving Focus World cars at 15, and there's always people with land and stuff like that. Oh yeah, I drove a car the first time. Can you remember the first time you physically was put in a rally car, harnesses on, and went, right, okay, go and express yourself, go and enjoy what this car can do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was probably either 6 or 7 years old. We used to live on land, so we had a few acres back in Canberra. And my dad bought my brother and I a 1978 Celica, maybe, a TA22 Celica, so rear-wheel drive and no power steering or anything like that. And he put a hydraulic handbrake in it for us so that we could do handbrakes, and that was probably where I learned the basics of car control. And then realistically, I spent the next 9 or 10 years after school every day just hanging big slides in different cars on our property at home.
Do you think that, because, we have a big thing over, especially in the UK at the moment, in Ireland, and I think it's happening in other parts of Europe where they have kind of junior championships, and it's a controlled environment and everything else, and it's almost the next progression from guys who've gone, and girls, of course, who have gone go-karting, and they kind of moved them into small, 1,000cc front-wheel drive cars, so they kind of get used to competition and stuff like that. Do you feel what you did is just as valid as going into competition at like 13, 14?
Yeah, I do. Only because I think the basis of any form of motorsport is car control. And that's something that I learned from a very young age. So although I almost avoided competition until after I finished school, you know, I didn't do much competition at all throughout my teens, but I did always have, you know, a level of car control underneath me. So, you know, there's different paths for everyone. Some people do go-karting and come up and, you know, they're probably a little bit more accelerated in the way they've learnt than what I did. But at the same time, in my very first rally, I had an understanding of what the car was doing and all that sort of thing. So I was probably a bit further ahead than someone who had done no driving and just moved straight into their first rally.
Was it always going to happen? You know, you just mentioned, you know, kind of 6 or 7 years old. Obviously, your dad obviously was rallying at a very high level and winning championships and events and stuff like that. Was it always going to happen that you were going to drive rally cars? You mentioned your brother. Does your brother compete at all? Does he get involved, or is it all falling to you now?
Yeah, I think it probably was always going to happen. In my head, it was always going to happen. I think Dad would have liked it if I went and tried something else like golf or tennis. But my brother and I have always driven, so I think it was bound to happen. And he's just started rallying, so he's 2 years younger than me. And he's probably looking at a similar path to me. He's just moved into the Corolla front-wheel drive that I started in. And he's looking to do a few events over the next 6 to 9 months or whatever, and then, you know, potentially one day he'll move into the Super 2000 that I've just competed in this year.
But where does Harry go then?
That's the question, isn't it? Look, the Super 2000, I don't think will be competitive in the ARC for much longer. You know, there's some talk of some faster cars coming in and with the AP4 regulations, I'm not sure if you know much about them, but they're a regulation basically designed for the Asia Pacific region. And it's basically for us to create cars that are equivalent to an R5 car.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that, to be honest with you. That was kind of where I was going to go next, funnily enough. So you kind of preempted where I was going to go next. Because obviously,
No,
it's perfect. It's perfect. It's a natural kind of segue. Because we had Hayden Padden on a few months back, who was talking about obviously what they've done with Hyundai over there. And obviously this kind of format that, you know, it's almost just kind of like a silhouette kind of situation. Now, Scott Pedd has done something in Australia, hasn't he, with the Peugeot 207. Hasn't he gone down that particular route, or have I got that wrong?
Scott's brother, Mark, has a Peugeot 208 or whatever it is, AP4 car, yeah. And so it's really the first one in Australia. And he had a pretty successful event at Rally Australia with that. He was trading stage times with Molly Taylor all event. So, you know, I think the AP4 platform is the way forward in this country. And obviously in New Zealand, there's been a really good uptake of the category. And we're hoping in the future that as far as Australian rallying goes, that's the direction it'll go in here as well.
I've got to ask you, and you don't have to answer, have you already started sketching out your AP4 Toyota?
We've definitely talked about it. You know, I can't comment yet on the spec of what it'll be or anything like that. But, you know, we've talked about where the future goes for me. And for a start, I think if we were to build a new car, we would do a left-hand drive. Everything I've driven so far in my career has been right-hand drive. But if I'm looking to compete overseas, then that's a bit of a disadvantage. So whatever car we build next will be a left-hand drive. And really, that's as far as we've got so far. But AP4, it's definitely something we're looking into. It'll be
fantastic. Now, I can even from my limited experience, the left-hand drive thing is not a big deal. Just so you know.
I have been told that, actually. Molly, when she went and did her first rally in a left-hand drive, it was in a Suzuki Swift with a H-pattern synchro box, and she managed. So I figure if you can get through with a H-pattern synchro box and left-hand drive for the first time, then whatever sequential car you get in, I'm sure I'll be able to manage.
Yeah, I drove one for the first time, and this is a genuine story. I got out of the rally car and got back in my road car, and I checked to see whether the knob for the door mirror was in neutral before I started it. That's how I'd automatically reached over to the wrong side of the car to check whether it was in neutral or not. So yeah, once you get into it, I actually prefer driving left-hand drive rally cars. I really do.
Yeah, well, to me, it makes a little bit of sense. The majority of us are right-handed. And so, you know, changing gears and pulling the handbrake and so on with your right hand actually makes a little bit more sense. So I'm sure, yeah, as you say, it's something that I get used to pretty quickly. One quick story I've got. I went and did the recce for Rally Finland last year. And okay. It was really my first experience of left-hand drive. I'd never driven a left-hand drive car before. And I had a BMW hire car. And I was driving up the motorway in Finland just after I arrived, reasonably jet-lagged. So I was a little bit tired. And every single time I went to go from fourth to fifth or fifth to sixth, I smashed my left knuckles on the left-hand door. And then, ow. And then I sort of realised that my right hand on my left.
Yeah. So you've already came over then and started getting involved in European rallies. What's on the horizon? Is there still going to get some recces in next year or possibly could there be an event?
Yeah, certainly one or the other. I'd like to do more recces. I think there's value in that. If I can't find the money in time to do an event in the JWRC or something like that, or if we decide that, you know, I'm not quite ready yet, then certainly doing the recces has some value, and it's probably a reasonably cost-effective way to go over and see the roads. So that's what I would plan to do. I think there's some merit in that. I did it in Finland last year, and, you know, that event's quite specific, so I had to work on my notes quite a bit just to make them work on those sorts of roads, because the reality is we don't really have roads like that. Well, not many places in the world have roads like that. So, you know, I'm sure every place is unique and different, so whatever I can do to be preparing to sort of, you know, have a proper go at Europe at some point, I'll do.
Now, you've just mentioned JWRC. Is that possibly something on the horizon?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pretty natural pathway for a young driver, I think. We've seen a lot of good drivers come out of JWRC in the past. Loeb, Ogier, Breen. Tiedemann, you know, all of these guys have come out of JWRC and gone on to have factory drives or, you know, at least pretty successful careers, certainly in the case of Loeb and Ogier. So it's definitely something I'll look at. We'll just have to wait and see. I can't use the excuse that Australia's too far away because I've had a couple of people before me, like Brendan Reeves and Molly Taylor, you know, go and have a go at JWRC or the WRC Academy as it was back then. So, you know, I definitely think talking to those guys and talking about how they and trying to find the money and all that sort of thing is all part of it. But, you know, it's definitely possible and it's something I'll aim to do.
Good, man. Listen, do me a favour. Will you keep us in the loop? Can we become podcast friends?
Can you keep us in the loop? Yeah, we can become podcast friends. I'll send you Snapchat stories.
That's all right. Brendo, don't get jealous. You're in your truck now listening to this. Don't get jealous. There's room for everyone, brother. There's room for everyone, okay? Now, as you're the last guest on this week's podcast, we always try to give our last guest a bit of room for manoeuvre, and we do it or any other businesses. Normally, our presenters do them at the top of the programme anyway. I'm going to give you a chance to do in any other business. Harry, do you think you can step up to the plate? Do you think you can do this?
Maybe any other business. Well, actually, this morning I woke up to a couple of big announcements. Firstly, they finalised the WSC calendar, which once again had Australia as the final round, which I'm very excited about. Hopefully next year we'll have a bit of a championship battle maybe at the final round as well. But the other thing that the WRC announced this morning was that the JWRC tender has gone to M Sport.
Wow. Now, now we're recording this, by the way, on the 1st of December, folks. So if you're somewhat confused by this, because this is next week's podcast, we'll have discussed this at the top of the program as well. But through the joys of time travel and podcasting, we're doing this on the morning that this has just been announced, which is why, obviously, for Harry, it's quite important. Now, the format of the DMAC Drive Trophy was kind of a, you know, €100,000 arrive and drive and stuff like that. Have you done any more research into the JWRC format? Is it going to be similar? Is it going to be an arrive and drive, or what have you gleaned from the announcement this morning, Harry?
No announcements as yet. There's not even a calendar as yet, actually, so we're not sure if it's going to be 4 rounds, 6 rounds, 7 rounds. But, you know, being an M-Sport package, I would expect an arrive-and-drive sort of a thing. And as a young driver, I actually think that's the most attractive way, is because it's a controlled series then. It's definitely one make, and, you know, M-Sport are controlling everything, so you're turning up and putting yourself up against other people in your position on a totally level playing field.
Now, I know from some of the guys that did the DMAT Drive Trophy and stuff like that, you know, several of them kind of went away and did extra events in a Fiesta R2, you know, the Fiesta R2T, of course, the 1 litre EcoBoost Turbo one. If you went down that route, there's not a great deal of those cars in Australia, is there? So what would you do? Would you look at relocating to Europe, or how would you see it?
Yeah, correct. There's actually no R2 turbos in Australia at this point. We've got a few R2s, but none of the turbos. So I'm not quite sure how I'd manage that yet. I certainly want to keep rallying in Australia. You know, I've got really good support from Toyota over here, so I certainly want to keep that going. And at the moment, it's still quite important for my development to be getting as many miles as I can, I think. And at this point, the most economical miles I can get are over here. Having said that, you know, to have a proper crack in Europe, I think you need to be doing as much over there as you can. So at this point, all these plans are evolving in my head, and they do every day. I sort of walk around in circles sometimes going, how do you get into the WRC? But if I stop and think about it logically, I'm sure we'll come up with something.
Good man. Listen, Harry, thank you for your excellence. Any other business? And thank you for coming on and talking to us about the championship. And as we said to Molly, you guys are always welcome to come on. In fact, I think probably next time, before the championship starts, I think we get the both of you on at the same time.
Oh no, that's a risk.
I think we do. Possibly we do a head-to-head here or something. I don't know. We've got to do something. Brendo, you'll be invited. Of course you will. I know you're screaming at your phone now. You'll be invited as well. Maybe we get the three Aussies on. There you go. Like
perfect.
The three amigos.
Perfect.
Happy days. Harry, listen, really appreciate it. And how do folks get in contact with you? What's your social media kind of bits and pieces? What have you got going on?
Instagram, Twitter, at Harry Bates 5. Don't have a Facebook page yet, so feel free to add my profile. But I'm going to sort out a Facebook page soon. It's just something I haven't ever got around to.
Good man. Listen, folks, that's how you get hold of Harry. You know how to get hold of us. It's absolute_rally. It's facebook.com/absoluterally. Folks, thanks for this download. Spread the love. Tell your friends. You know where we are. We'll be in your little podcast hole every week on a Thursday morning normally. Thanks again.